sorry if it's a piece of when you read this gospel passage. And it's a complete emotional roller coaster for him. So he sees the Lord and he jumps off the boat and runs to the Lord. And then the Lord does that thing which must have been excruciatingly painful for Peter, but at the same time wonderful, is that he asks him three times, "Do you love me?" And of course Peter would have known that the number three questions was significant, because it was the exact mirror image of the three denials, the three times that he had said during the Passion, "I don't even know them." And so in a sense it must have been extremely painful to be brought face to face with that reality, but at the same time wonderful to know that Christ was giving him the opportunity to act out his sorrow and to be reconciled and restored to his place within the apostles. And then of course our Lord says to Peter, "Feed my sheep," which means, "Peter, you are going to be the chief shepherd of my flock." So that must have been quite nice for Peter, because Peter realises, "Hurrah, I'm going to be Pope, fantastic." But then immediately after that, our Lord says, you know, 2 seconds after that, our Lord tells him, "But you're going to die horribly." So that's a bit of a downer, really. But what I want you to do is I want you to try and offer an interpretation of our Lord predicting the death of Peter and what that death means based on his conversation with the Lord. So you know that the Lord asked Peter 3 times, "Do you love me?" And Peter replies 3 times, "Yes, Lord, you know I love you." But in the passage, in the original Greek, there are 2 words that are used to mean knowing or to know. And one of them sort of means, well, you've seen it all. You've seen everything. Draw your own conclusion. And the other is about intellectual certainty, that sort of internal, absolute, conceptual knowing. And then there are 2 different words used for loving as well in the conversation. So you know that in Greek there are basically 3 words for love. So eros, which means desiring love, erotic love. Don't need to worry about that one because it doesn't appear in this conversation. But then the other 2 are philia, which is the love of friendship, which is a good thing, but it's not the purest or the highest form of love. The purest or the highest form of love is agape. And agape is not just friendship, but it's entirely selfless love. It's that love where you will absolutely and willingly lay down your life for another. So, in the conversation then, wildly over-translating and missing all the subtleties of what, you know, all of the kind of implied kind of saying things by not saying things that's going on between Jesus and Peter. The conversation roughly runs like this. Jesus says, "Peter, do you agape love me? That is, do you love me with a perfect self-sacrificial love?" Peter replies, "Lord, you've seen it all. You've seen how I behave. You know I love you with an imperfect friendship love." And Jesus says to him again, "Peter, do you agape love me? Do you love me with that perfect self-sacrificial love?" And Peter replies again, "Lord, you've seen it all. You've seen my life. And you know that I love you with an imperfect friendship love." And then you get to the 3rd question. The 3rd question changes everything. Because the Lord changes the question. And he says, not, "Do you agape self-sacrificially love me?" But he says, "Do you love me with the love of friendship? The imperfect love of friendship." And then Peter says, "Lord, you know with the knowledge of absolute intellectual certainty, because you know everything, that the love I have for you is the imperfect love of friendship." And there are 2 things going on there, I think. First of all, After his failure during the Passion, Peter has begun to understand himself. He knows his love for the Lord is not perfect. And in his newfound humility and honesty, he says to the Lord, "Look, this is the love I have for you. And you know it's not perfect, but it is the best that I can manage." And secondly, the Lord recognizes Peter's humility, and he dials down what he asks of Peter, and he says, "Okay, I'll take the imperfect love of friendship." But this is the context in which he then predicts Peter's death. He says, but then immediately after taking that imperfect love of friendship, he says, "But later, Peter, you are going to lay down your life for me. When you grow old, you will stretch out your hands, and someone else will put a belt around you and take you where you would rather not go." The Lord is saying to Peter, "At the moment, your love is imperfect, but I'll take it. But there will come a time in the future, Peter, when you will have that perfect self-sacrificial love for me." Basically, the Lord is saying, "I'll work with what you can give me right now, but eventually I am going to transform it." And there are, I think, then two lessons to be learned. First, the Lord will work with what is imperfect and make it into something better. And that should be a great consolation to us, because so often we are imperfect in our love of the Lord. How often do we do the right thing, but from mixed motives? How often do we start well, but then not follow through? Nonetheless, just like he does with Peter, the Lord is willing to accept our stumbling and imperfect efforts. And the second lesson is this. Peter dies the shameful death of a common criminal, crucified in the Emperor Nero's arena on a fraudulent charge of civil disobedience. To the outsider, that must have looked like the most abject failure. But to those who understand, that failure is exactly the moment when Peter finally raises himself up to the self-sacrificial love that the Lord had asked of him. Externally, it is a failure, but it is the way Peter fails, the internal quality of his failure, that actually turns catastrophe into a sublime moment of victory. And that's important for us, because we live amidst failure. Sometimes our own personal failures and shortcomings, or perhaps just living in what seems to be a very dark hour for the church in the Western world. But for us Christians, victory often, if not always, lies not in our quantifiable achievements. Rather, it lies in the quality of how we fail. Victory, the measure of our humanity, the measure of our Christianity, can most often be judged by looking at those things for which we are willing to fail.
Yes.
standing.